Well, hello, guys, and welcome to episode 33 of the Going Deeper podcast. My name is JD, and I'll be hosting for you today. Along with me, as we sit down for this discussion, is Jeff.
Good morning.
And Adam.
Good morning.
And we're excited today to be here talking about yesterday's lesson at GNG called Border Wall. Interesting discussion and a timely one, given the fact that this the immigration issue has become a very heavily talked about issue in our culture, and one that has drawn extreme interest from people on both sides of the political aisle. And so, as we sat down for this discussion today, what I want to do is I want to just start by doing something that I think you mentioned in the lesson yesterday, Dad, which was that the Israelites at various points were called to some degree to take heed of and pay mind to the fact that there were people coming into their culture who were different than them and who were from different places, and to some degree to stand in their shoes for a second. And so what I wanted to do this morning was just ask you guys to tell those listening to us about a time where you found yourself in a new place, a new culture, a new situation, whether it was inside of America or outside. We've all experienced new places, new things, new people, going to a different spot. Just give us a time or a place where you experienced that shift in cultures.
I can think of a couple. One which happened inside the United States and one which happened outside. I grew up right here in Highland County, which is, I think, according to the most recent demographic study, 97% white, like me. And I remember my first year in college, a buddy of mine and I went into Chicago one day. And we ended up in an area of Chicago that was predominantly black, and it was kind of amazing to me, because I thought about it a lot later. in a sea of people where we ended up, he and I were probably the only two white people within sight. And I remember it really struck me that some of my black friends in high school, I wondered, is that how they feel in Highland County, Ohio?
Right.
Because it is so predominantly white. And it really made an impression on me that day, because to some degree I felt out of my element. Mm-hmm. And I wondered, I thought, I wonder if this is how my teammates on the football team, who are African Americans, I wonder if that's how they feel. And I wondered, is that how they feel every day at high school? Because there were so few of them then. The other one was the first time I went to Haiti. Now, all of a sudden you're in a totally different culture. Most of them don't even speak English. A lot of Creole or French or whatever. And now you're in a culture where you are way in the minority. They don't even speak the same language. The customs are totally different, and it does make you feel out of place, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And you wonder how you fit in, and if you can communicate well and get your point across, that kind of thing. And so, yeah, it was pretty disconcerting the first time I went there.
Mm-hmm. Adam, what about you, man?
I kind of stick with the theme of in-states and out-of-states. I guess I'll start out-of-states. The organization I used to work for kind of sent us to a few different countries, and I've personally been to Germany and Jamaica as well on top of that. But the one where it probably stood out the most was when I was in Jamaica. We went down to build a house for a family in Jamaica who lost their home, and it was just interesting, especially going through the airport once we got there, because everyone in there is holding AKs, they're holding rifles, they're holding shotguns, like the security people, and it was just like completely different. We're also bringing like dental supplies with us, and they're having to stop us and go through everything that we have and invading our space, type thing. And then getting into actual the depths of Jamaica, where we're in almost like the jungle is what it seemed like. And we're helping build this house for this family. And I think I was even talking about it last night at youth group, where literally the entire community came out to serve these people as well. It wasn't just simply us. It was the community that came out to help. It was the first time in my life where I was like, this is true, authentic community, where literally everyone's pitching in for their neighbor. It honestly was, it seemed foreign. It seemed different to me. I couldn't imagine doing that type and living in that type of environment and spending, instead of spending a day trying to provide for yourself, you're spending a day trying to provide for your neighbor, which was really, really neat. The second time was... I grew up in Jamestown, Ohio, out in the middle of country. My dad's a farmer there still to this day, very similar to Hillsboro type area, and moved to Louisville, Kentucky, and started working for Spectrum, where I go in there and it's like country boy surrounded by all city folk, you know, and it doesn't seem like it should be that much difference, you know, Ohio to Kentucky, you know, but it was. Oh, like just a night and day, basically, getting to know these people, getting to know their stories, their backgrounds. It made me feel out of place for the longest time. But what came out of the stories that I gathered from it, the people that I got to know, it changed my perspective on a lot of things and helped me to grow as an individual. So it actually ended up being really good for me. So,
yeah, one of the more humorous times where I've kind of felt out of my element, and just not sure how to necessarily interact with people was, and this is going to sound like a dumb example, but to some degree or another, when I went to New York City to visit my brother, because it's a really different cultural feel. In Hillsboro, it's not uncommon if you're walking through the store, you're walking from one place to another, you see people, everybody kind of smiles, you wave, you say hi. You know, in that environment, there's so many people. You would literally be doing nothing but that if that was your style of operation, right? And so it was weird for me to kind of get used to not like looking people in the eye and smiling and stuff and have them do that back. It was very strange because I did it to a couple of people, like, hey, how you doing? You know, and like nothing.
try that on a subway,
right? Or, you know, it's awkward, you know, and it's really strange to be in an environment where, you know, the way you've done things naturally, and even this is America, this is, you know, a prosperous city. I mean, everybody's fine, right? It's isn't like, you know, entering an oppressed war zone. I mean, everybody's fine. You know, they're riding a subway to work, but they all have the earphones in and, you know, nobody's paying attention to anybody else. And you don't break that unwritten rule that you don't make eye contact and stuff like that. It's just, you know, it's an interesting environment. You know, and I remember, you know, one of the first times I went to New York, you know, you're constantly looking up and looking around and checking things out, and like nobody around you's doing that, you know, and it's a very interesting experience. And certainly it's certainly a very a diverse cultural experience as well, because there's so many different types of people in New York City, different cultures, different backgrounds, different foods, different, you know, places to be and to go and to do. And so you get a lot of that in one small compressed area. And so it was interesting kind of trying to figure out how you engage with that community a little bit.
It makes me think of my buddy Ronald that I met at Spectrum. I became good friends with him. We still stay in contact to this day from time to time. And I remember he was telling me about his high school experience and how it was a lot of different cultures all together in the high school. And he openly told me, he's like, it was a pretty rough high school. And he said, one day he told me, he said, Adam, I think you would have done really well at my high school. He's like, you would have had to get in two or three fights before people would have liked you, but you would have done really well in my high school. So I was like, all right.
Getting some fights. That's funny. That's funny. So Dad, we talked at length yesterday about the immigration issue and the lesson, and a little bit from a historical political perspective, where we've been at as a nation and how we've handled this issue in the past, and really focusing more heavily on what the Bible has to say about how we treat people who come into the world around us. And so just give us a sense. Was there anything that you felt like you didn't get to say, or anything that was left out, or just didn't have time to explain in full?
Well, I really hope that people understood, and I tried to pound this home at the beginning of the lesson, is that in a way we're all immigrants. Mm-hmm. Everybody is an immigrant. Our ancestors came here from someplace else.
Right.
It doesn't matter if you're a Native American Indian, or if you're an African American, or if you're a descendant of white Europeans, you're here from someplace else. And one of the things that you know, God told the Israelites, and he was very clear on this, is to treat those foreigners or aliens in your midst with respect and with love, because he said to them, don't forget where you came from. Mm-hmm. He said, you weren't from here. You were from Egypt. You all came from Egypt. And so don't forget that.
And I think where they were going wasn't their natural homeland, because Abraham came from somewhere else too.
True.
Right.
And so I think, you know, the point for them and for all of us as well is those people that want to come in to the United States, as Christian people, we need to treat them with love and with respect. Mm-hmm. Because we should remember, even though maybe we were born here, but we should remember that our ancestors came from someplace else. Mm-hmm. And so in a way, we're all immigrants. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, at some point, all of us hopefully will migrate to heaven. Mm-hmm. And so we'll be immigrants again. Mm-hmm. So
now, one of the things that I thought was really interesting about yesterday's discussion was the clear delineation between the roles of the family, the church, and the state. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the state being the one that truly controls the immigration issue.
True.
Now, in families, obviously, we can train our children to be mindful of the experience of people who are coming from the outside. And one of the experiences I had as a child was having individuals of Asian descent, you know, come into like my school because, you know, of WESTEC being here. And that's obviously a Japanese company. And so there would be people from that company that would come over frequently. Some would stay for several years. And so that was, I mean, I went to school with Japanese kids who were here because their parents were a part of, you know, the WESTEC company. And so there are people that come into our culture frequently, obviously for very good reasons, you know, very helpful reasons, you know, business-related reasons, family-related reasons, that come into our culture, and they carry with them a very different experience and a different background, and they come from a different country with different cultures and customs. So as families, we can train our children to be mindful and caring about that. In the church, we can train people and teach people what the Bible has to say about being kind and caring and loving and supportive of people coming in from the outside. But the state has a much different role, and you really tried to belabor that opinion quite a bit.
Yeah, I think that's where we get in trouble when we think about the immigration, is we have a tendency in our culture to confuse the roles. And when you think about government or the state or the king, call it whatever name you want to use, we have to remember that government is an ordinance of God. And I think it's in reality what it is, it's God's response to the nature of people, really. Because I think that when sin entered the human experience, if people are going to live in society, there needs to be something in place government, if you will, that will curb bad behavior, that will set limits on human conduct. Because I really believe that there's one thing that human beings can't really cope with, and that's chaos. Chaos in the community. Mm-hmm. When we get to the point where we can't trust anybody else, that's why if you ever think about it, one of the things that scares, I think, everybody is riot conditions, where anything can happen. When you see a city like Baltimore, for example, or Ferguson explode, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden there's looting, there's people are running rampant, there's no order, that is a condition that we cannot stand long term. You can't live like that.
People can't stand
no
it. For whether there was at any point in that issue a decent point to be made. Once it's exploded to the point of like violence and aggression and all that, people mm-hmm. can't live in that environment.
Yeah. When there is no safety, let's use that word. When there's no safety in the community, when you have to fear everyone, mm-hmm. we simply can't live like that.
Right.
In fact, I mean, we would prefer almost a totalitarian authority to chaos.
Now, you mentioned that in the few minutes before the podcast started, and you had an interesting story from Pastor Pierre about that. If you wouldn't mind, share that, because that's interesting.
Yeah, there's actually a couple of stories, I think, that bear on this point. I think a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago, we had here at Good News Gathering for a extended interview on a Sunday morning. We had a couple, one of whom grew up in Iraq, and the other who grew up in the country of Jordan in the Middle East. And I was fascinated that the woman who grew up in Iraq indicated, now she was a Christian, but she indicated that it was better under Saddam Hussein for Christians and in her opinion, the country as a whole. It was better under the rule of Saddam Hussein than it was after the Americans came in and took him out. Mm. And I questioned her about that statement. It's like, how can you say that? It's better under a dictator. And she said, at least when he was in power, there was law and order. Mm. You could walk down the street. You didn't have to worry about other people. And basically her point was, as long as he was in power, as long as you weren't trying to take over or break the laws or anything like that or become involved in government, you're fine. Basically, keep your head down, mind your own business, and you can get along just fine. But she said when the Americans took him out, there was no government then in place to take his place. And she said, now you had to be afraid of everybody. And she talked about the fact that an armory that was located somewhere in the city had been broken into. And she said, you've got all kind of people walking around with machine guns. She had another person in her neighborhood who actually had stolen a tank, had a tank sitting in his backyard. And she said, now you're afraid of everybody. Mm-hmm. Same thing in Haiti. Many of the listeners know that in January when we go to Haiti, my task is to teach political philosophy in the high school. And I was teaching about democracy one day, and Pastor Pierre came into the class, and he's listening to the discussion, and all of a sudden he pipes up and says, Haiti needs a dictator. And I was just stunned. I just couldn't believe it. And basically what he was saying, because if you read Haitian history, you've heard about Papa Doc and Baby Doc, two totalitarian leaders that were in power in Haiti from, I think, 1957 to 1987. They were bad people, but they kept order in society. Mm-hmm. And as long as you did not try to take power from them, as long as you stayed out of government, you let them do their thing, you were fine. You could get along fine. And I'll never forget, Pastor Beer said, you know, when Papa Doc was in power, you didn't have to worry about people breaking into your house, or you could walk down the street and you wouldn't be bothered because there was law and order. But don't try to run for president.
Right. Because then you'll end up dead.
Then they'll kill you. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty blunt.
But what's fascinating about it, so effectively, you know, even bad governments
is better than none.
Is better than no government.
Yeah, it's interesting. John Calvin, the theologian, once made the statement. He said, it is bad to live under a prince who permits nothing. Okay, somebody who's in complete control. He said it's bad to live under a prince who permits nothing, but much worse to live under one who permits everything.
Yeah.
And it's true. When there's no rules, when anything goes, we're all at risk.
So coming back to the immigration issue, that seems like, to some degree or another, it calls for a little bit of a balanced perspective.
Sure.
There needs to be some limit, and there needs to be some pathway for immigrants
exactly
into any culture. There has to be some way that people can legitimately enter a culture, and then there has to be some limit upon that entrance. Because if you open the borders and you let everything in, then you get everything.
And, oh, yes.
And there are challenges with that. If you shut it down and lock it down and you make it impossible for people, then that carries with it another adverse, you know, issue, which is you're missing out on potentially numerous positives and numerous helps to the overarching society that could come with that influx of idea and culture and talent, et cetera.
Sure. And I think one of the difficulties that we're dealing with now is that if those statistics are correct that I cited, and there are in fact over 11 million illegal immigrants currently in our culture, then something needs to be done to give those folks who are here and who can add to our culture some pathway. To citizenship, because you do have those examples like the one I used yesterday of the young man that was brought to the United States at the age of six. Mm-hmm. This is, and now he's in his 30s. He's married. He works hard. He's a productive member of our community, even though he's technically an illegal. And you know, he ended up here through no fault of his own. His father brought him here, And there's got, I struggle to think that we would just boot him out. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that I see that as just and equitable. At the same time, just to continue to allow what's going on now, which is people coming across our borders with very little. What's the word I'm looking for? Interdiction, I guess, or very, very little ability to stop that from happening. That's a real problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a problem that our government needs to address, because there are negative elements that are entering our country.
Mm-hmm. So one of the we had an interesting comment card come in yesterday from the audience. It said the following. It said, immigration has become a political issue and stopped being a manhood issue. I want to stop right there, because there's more in this that I want to talk about. But do you think that's the case? Has it stopped becoming a person issue and really just become a political issue that we kick back and forth and we argue about?
I think it's become a political football in a lot of ways. And I think that in the political environment we live in today, there doesn't there doesn't seem to be the ability to compromise, to come to the table, to think through what's best for the country. It's become very positional. And that's not good for our country.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that as people who live in a free society, who have the ability to vote, and to affect who our representatives are, I think we really have to think about who we put into office and whether or not these are solution oriented people or whether or not they are ideologues.
You know, what's fascinating to me in watching political debates and political campaigns as they go on is quite often you'll see the candidates talk about how strong they are on X, Y, or Z issue, but almost never, to your point, make a claim to be a good problem solver.
Mm-hmm.
Or to be an excellent negotiator, right? You don't hear them talk about, hey, I'm willing to sit down with people who completely disagree with me, and we're going to find a solution. You know, I mean, so many of the campaigns almost draw on like power play language. I'm strong on guns, or I'm strong on immigration, and nope, don't you? I mean, I'm never going to be swayed from this position, or I'm, you know, and it almost as if we send candidates, you know, armed into battle, you know, into the political spectrum, with the expectation that if they waver at all, or change their viewpoint, that, well, you've lied to us. You know, like there's very little. It seems to me there's very little value in our culture for the extremely good negotiator and someone who's willing to get on the solution side of things.
I think we're in a very difficult time in our history, and I believe you're right. That we tend not to send negotiator types into government, in part because I think a lot of the electorate believes that they have not been told the truth by their candidates about what they really believe.
Mm.
What is really core to you as an individual? Okay. And so we've sent people off to be our representatives, and all of a sudden we find them making decisions or voting for things that violate core values.
Mm.
And we wonder, how did they get there?
Mm-hmm.
That's not what they said previously. Mm-hmm. And so there is, on the other side of that, I guess that coin maybe,
mm-hmm.
there is some fear, I think, in people who cast votes. Can I really trust this person to do what they said?
Mm-hmm.
And so what that does to the politicians is it forces them to be more strident, I think, and more fixed,
right,
in their positions. I think that's one of the fascinating things that you're kind of seeing now in the whole political spectrum is people are asking the question, will you do what you said?
Mm-hmm.
Will you do what you said? Because if not, there's another election coming.
Right.
And in a way, there's a lot of good in that.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
I think it's interesting. You said, you know, talking about having a good negotiator in that role. But the thing is whether you like him or not, that's what our president is and it has been, is a great negotiator.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what makes a great businessman in a lot of ways, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what he was previously. And so I just think it's interesting that for the majority of the time, I think that's true. We don't put people in position like that, but our president right now, though, that is his experience.
He's certainly come out of that. Yeah. I mean, I guess what I'm I guess what I never hear in campaigns is I'm going to listen really well.
Yeah.
You know, like you just don't, you don't hear that. You know, and even the ones that do, you kind of get the sense that they really don't, you know? And so to some degree or another, I mean, there's a place in this where I think it, you know, it does become more about alignment politically than it does about what's the right thing for the people in the moment and with this particular issue. But I wanted to continue because there was more to this that I thought was interesting. You know, because the person writing on the comment card indicated that oppressed people should follow the established procedures to seek protection. And ultimately said that laws need to be enforced no matter who you are. When I get caught speeding, I expect to be punished. And I guess in my mind, because I see where that person's coming from. We have laws.
Mm-hmm.
Enforce the laws.
Abide
by the laws. And it's going to be okay. And the question I have to ask, because you even raised it in the discussion yesterday at church, is it's been 30 plus years since immigration was touched on a wide scale in this country, politically speaking. There's a whole lot of change that's happened in 30 years. There's a whole lot of difference in our world. Can we legitimately just say, well, follow the laws and it's all going to be fine?
Well, I think that you have to be really careful with that because that could apply to any law,
right?
At any time,
sure.
Okay,
sure.
And so we all know, and I think that is the one thing that both sides of the political spectrum at this point in time do agree on, and that is that the system is broken.
Right.
Okay. Well, fix it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we elected you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I think maybe that's something that our representatives have not yet experienced, is a sense of anger from the voting people, from, you know, from voters that the job isn't getting done.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to be fixed. And so if the people that we elect refuse to fix it, then we need to elect other people who will do the job that government is supposed to do.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. I think we have to be very careful about saying, well, if it's broken and let's just break it.
Right.
That's problematic as well.
Obviously. Yeah.
We're a nation of laws and mm-hmm. should be.
Sure.
But that means that we elect people who will change laws that are no longer working for the good of the people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think I mean I agree with you. I think the challenge though is, as you mentioned, you know, that we end up with some fundamental inequity in the system. As you mentioned yesterday, when it can take years for an individual to come in legally at significant and horrible cost, both emotionally, monetarily, et cetera. And we create a system where we effectively incentivize illegal immigration.
Sure.
And we
sure.
disincentivize the naturalization process. Mm-hmm. I absolutely am not advocating that we just, you know, truck the laws and act like it's not important. You know, from the standpoint of, you know, from a governmental perspective, it can't be just bury our heads in the sand and, well, just abide by the laws that we created 30 years ago and we're not going to do anything about it.
No, that's senseless.
Right.
We have to be able to adjust to changing circumstances.
Yep.
That's all there is to it.
Yeah. Now, as we kind of begin the process of wrapping up this discussion, you know, let's think in terms of, you know, you made the comment that Jesus himself was an example of an immigrant, and that he lived the life of an immigrant in many cases, largely pretty poor throughout his life, from what we can tell. Someone who had to walk everywhere he went, someone who never gained massive worldly traction as far as his ministry was concerned. It's, you know, he told his followers, you guys are gonna see bigger and greater things than you've even seen with me present here, because I'm here to start it, but you guys are going to be the ones that take this out into the world. And so he in a worldly sense, a human sense, did not see the growth and gigantic nature of his ministry and its effect, because he spent, you know, 30 some years living right in one spot, not moving around too much. Give us a sense about how we can draw from Jesus' perspective of living life as an immigrant to be caring and kind-hearted to those who come to us from different places.
Well, I think it's about treating them no differently than we would anyone else. Mm. You know, when you think about it, as Christians, we're called to love everybody that we come in contact with, and we're called to treat everybody with dignity and with respect. And so the fact that somebody comes from Somalia or Sudan or Haiti or Mexico or some South American country, that should make no difference to us as Christians as to how we treat those people. It really shouldn't. Now, obviously, government is very different. Mm-hmm. And I hope that point came across clearly yesterday. I mean, you know, we have to understand that government is not here to redeem mankind. Mm. That is the goal of the church. Mm-hmm. Okay? Government is not here to forgive sin. Government is here to restrain sin. Yep. As best it can.
Right.
But it's our job as Christians and as the church to spread the good news of Jesus Christ as wide and as far as we can.
You know, one of the fascinating things about that, and we've had this discussion to some degree or another before, is that I feel like in many cases our culture is shifting into this perspective where we want the government to be the savior.
Oh my.
We expect the government to create a culture in which we can fling the doors of immigration wide open and
open
anybody
borders.
Can come in, where we can remove the need for guns, where we can say to anyone and everyone, you're free to be yourself in total, right? The reality is that's not the world we live in. And we can't manufacture it.
Well, it's
no
it's,
government can.
No, it's fascinating because really, the people who say that we want, you know, that somehow mankind is going to become good enough where we will no longer need government, we'll no longer need borders, we'll no longer need law and order, and what they want is they want the garden without God. Mm-hmm. And you will never have the garden in a world where sin is a reality. Mm-hmm. You will not. There is no utopia out there. Mm-mm. And the people that are searching for it will search in vain.
Mm-hmm. Just kind of thinking about even Jesus' life, and especially like John 15, where it says, "This is my command, to love one another just as I have loved you." And thinking about the Great Commission of sending out, or sending us out to create disciples of all nations, and just kind of combining and even loving your neighbor as yourself, and caring for the orphans and widows, and just kind of the message of Jesus, and it's always about loving those around us. And you made a great point that the way as Christ followers that we are to treat people compared to how government handles situations are two different scenarios, but what we have here in the States, the 11 million that immigrants that are currently in the States illegally, it doesn't matter if they're here illegally or not. We are to love them as Jesus commanded us. And so I just keep going back to that in my mind of, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've seen people mistreating people that they think is an illegal immigrant. And that's just because we think that they're illegal, or even if they are illegal, it doesn't really matter. We need to love them anyways. If the government decides to step in and remove that person from this area, that's their job. Our job is simply to love them. Mm-hmm. And so do not pass judgment on them is what I would probably say. We can't simply say you're breaking the law, and then because of that, we don't show them love. We need to step through that and treat them as though Jesus has called us to create a disciple in them.
Mm-hmm.
That's just kind of what keeps ringing in my mind, I guess.
Well, what's jumping out at me is, you know, I've long believed that Jesus, with very rare exceptions, is this incredible high wire walker, because he manages to balance things that are in tension that nobody else that I've seen, so except in people who draw close to him, right? Jesus manages to hold things in tension that very few people are able to. I mean, you look at the way our government fractures over things like guns and over things like immigration and over things like, you know, social policies and whatnot. You see how Jesus is able to balance this phenomenal compassion with this definitive truth. I mean, you look at the woman caught in the act of adultery. Go and sin no more, neither do I condemn you. Like, I mean, these two statements that literally the average person can't do it. They can't do it. They can't show that kind of radical grace and yet call that same person to a higher standard of living. They just can't do it. And our culture shows open up a socially combustible thread on Facebook and you'll see us just immediately divide over it. It's an immediate like, and what's interesting about this discussion, I feel like, is that in that lesson you were trying to get, and I really feel like it's been kind of all the way across the board through this series, is that you're trying to drive those of us who are Christians to go back to the Bible, which manages almost throughout to hold a balanced perspective of so many of these issues,
mm-hmm.
right? To balance, you know, things. And so loving people and caring for people, regardless of their situation or station in life or former place of living, right? That's love. That's grace. That's compassion, right? At the same time, respect the governmental authorities, Romans 13, mm-hmm. and abide by the established laws, right? So there's this balancing act that the Bible manages that we as Christians, we can't fall into one camp or the other.
True.
You know, and so what it feels like you're advocating, and I feel like the Bible is advocating, is this balanced perspective of love people, love people, love people, allow the government to do its job and force it as a voting citizen, force it to do its job,
mm-hmm.
which is to create laws that everybody is supposed to abide by and then abide by them.
Exactly.
You know, it's a balanced perspective that's very difficult to achieve. And I'd like your thoughts on this right before we finish up. Why do you think it's so doggone hard for us to do that?
Because we're flawed human beings.
Mm-hmm.
We're sinful.
Mm-hmm.
And our tendency is to take sides. Our tendency is, I think, to mismanage that balance between grace and truth.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult. And as long as we're sinful people, we will get it wrong on occasion.
Mm-hmm.
That's reality. We're not going to ever be in a perfect world. Like I said earlier, utopia is beyond us. The closest that we can get to utopia is to follow God as to the very best of our ability. That's it.
Well, and with that, I think that's a great place to stop for today, because I don't think there's much more that can be said. The reality is that this issue is being dealt with and constructed in a fallen world. And so whatever potential changes and solutions that can be made and should be made to the immigration policy of our nation will be flawed measures
exactly.
created by flawed people. And there will be people hurt by any measure that we create. There will be people left out by mm-hmm. any measure created. And that includes a wide open borders method as well. Mm-hmm. There will be people hurt and left out by that too.
Sure.
And so regardless of what way we go, we will mismanage this. The reality is we can do the best we can, and it's on us as voting citizens, however, to walk out the steps that Jesus called us to walk out of love and compassion and encouraging our government to do the things it's supposed to do.
You know, our founding fathers had an interesting concept that we don't talk about much anymore, and it was this concept of what they called the common good. What is the best solution we can arrive at for the most people in our country?
Yeah.
And they drove at that. They tried to achieve that, understanding, like you said, that any human attempt at law or whatever, there will be flaws because we're flawed human beings. There will be people, regardless of how great a comprehensive immigration policy that we might come up with, there will be those people on the fringe of that law who get hurt by it. That's reality in a fallen world.
Mm-hmm.
You do the very best that you can as a legislator or a lawmaker, and you try to create a law that affects the most good for the most number. But perfection is not achievable. Possible. On this plane, it's not.
Well, guys, we hope that you have enjoyed this conversation and that as you think through whether it's your own thoughts and political leanings, one of the things that I think regardless of which side of the aisle you may trend toward, this series has been one that probably has challenged where you sit at some point or another, and that's good and important, because our politics are not our faith, and they should not be, and as a result we come at this series with the hope that we will all focus on the Bible and allow our politics to align to it, as opposed to trying to get the Bible to align to our red or blue. And so we come at this discussion humbly, knowing that God has got a lot to teach us, and will have a lot to teach us in the coming week. Dad, if you would just give us a little bit of a preview on what's coming next in the final lesson of this series.
Well, this next lesson is entitled Erasing History. And what we're going to be looking at in this lesson is the impact of history. And I know for some in our audience, they're probably thinking, ugh, that was the class I hated the most in high school. I never wanted to take another history class. But I think we need to learn. We need to learn from the past. In fact, the Bible has a lot to say about remembering what went before.
Mm.
And in a lot of ways, it calls us back to those original truths that God delivered to us. Mm. And so we're going to be looking at the importance of history. And I think it's a very important topic for us, because I think in our culture today, there are many people who want to either erase or whitewash our history
mm-hmm.
here in America. And while I understand that on the one hand, because some of our history has negative aspects to it.
Deeply troubling.
Aspects of our history. By the same token, if we wash it away, then can we learn from it anymore?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is no.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be very careful about how we deal with the history of our country.
Mm-hmm. Well, guys, we hope you are here next Sunday to dive into that discussion and join us as we seek God's wisdom on how to deal with the history of not only our country, but the history of our world. As we go, you are welcome to send in any comment cards as happened today. You know, if we get a communication card that sparks our interest, we're happy to deal with that in the podcast, as well as answering any questions you guys might have. You can send those in by email at info@goodnewsgathering.org, or send those to us by dropping that communication card in the back of the auditorium. We hope you guys have a great week, and we look forward to sitting down and talking about things with you as we go forward. Thanks, and take care, and have a wonderful day, guys.
Take care, everybody.
Thanks a lot. Have a good one.